Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Blister Podcast on the Blister Podcast Network. I'm Jonathan Ellsworth, and you can check out everything we're doing and reviewing over at blisterreview.com. Well, at our Blister Summit 2024, I had a conversation with four really remarkable people who also happen to be remarkable athletes: Angel Collinson, Vasu Sojitra, Mallory Duncan, and Elise Sogstad shared stories about their all-time favorite days in the mountains, their scariest experiences, the times they were the most starstruck, what they wish they could tell their younger selves, and more. And if you are already fortunate enough to know Angel or Mallory or Elise or Vasu, well, then you know you're in for a good conversation here. And if you don't know all four of these people, well, then I guarantee you're going to enjoy getting to know them and you're going to enjoy this conversation. Also, if you'd like to watch the video of this conversation, well, then just head over to our YouTube channel. We'll include a link to it in the show notes of this episode. Today's conversation is presented by Sturtevant's, which is celebrating 75 years of being a specialty ski and bike shop in the Sun Valley region. They have locations in Ketchum, Sun Valley, and Haley, Idaho. And Sturtevant's is one of our Blister recommended shops for many reasons. And now, with winter closing out here in the Northern Hemisphere, Sturtevant's has some fantastic deals on winter gear, ranging from 20 to 60% off. So it's a great time to buy the gear you've been eyeing all season, and all their demo skis are now on sale. Furthermore, it is always a good idea to take care of your gear before you put it away at the end of the season, and Sturtevant's has a full-service ski shop that will make sure your gear is in great shape for next season. Yeah, yesterday was closing day here in Crested Butte, so I'm already thinking about next year. But we are still going to be skiing a lot, getting a lot of touring in this season. I keep telling myself that, as I was kind of sad yesterday, thinking about how the chairlifts were going to be done spinning for the season. So yeah, bring on touring season and bike season. And speaking of bikes, Sturtevant's Haley Bike Shop is open. So it is time to get your bike ready and explore all the truly amazing trails that the Sun Valley area has to offer. Furthermore, Sturtevant's is also home to Sun Valley Mountain Guides, so this summer, you can pair your great gear with a knowledgeable guide to take you out to explore the Wood River Valley. So stop by one of the Sturtevant's locations today, and of course, tell them we sent you. And now, let's get to story time with Angel, Mallory, Elise, and Vasu. Here we go. Well, I am very happy to be here with a very distinguished and very interesting crew of people. We like to call these stories from the field, and we're just honestly here to collect good stories from some interesting and accomplished folks. So that is our work here today. As always, we will be taking audience questions. I think just to get started, some of you need no introduction, but I want to just, nevertheless, I'll have the panelists introduce themselves. Just talk a little bit about when you first got into skiing, how you first got into skiing. I think we can leave it from that, and then we'll roll into more questions.
I am Elise Sogstad, born and raised in Alaska. First got on skis at a couple years old. Before that, was thrown in the backpack. Too bad that's not really allowed anymore.
I saw a movie that did that.
Some places you can. I know Pep throws his kids in the backpack at, I think Alta allows it, but that's a lot of places right, don't. It's not legal. But we digress. I grew up ski racing and then got into free ride because times changed and I love skiing. So here I am.
Wait, first time in CB?
First time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here. It's a legendary place, so I'm glad to finally come and visit.
Hey, my name is Vasu. So Jitra, I don't know if you guys know, but I am an adaptive skier. I'm an athlete. I'm an athlete for the North Face and Subaru and REI and a few other brands. I first got into skiing when I was 10 years old, and that was through watching the X Games. I like skateboarding as well, so I was skateboarding first. And then watching from the Summer X Games to the Winter X Games, I started seeing folks like Salema, Master Kayla, and that was a cool little representation back in the day to see folks like me be in those extreme sports. So that's kind of how it started. And then I started watching, does anyone remember the movie Johnny Tsunami? Of course, right? So Hawaiian kid coming into a ski town. I was like, all right, cool, another brown kid like going skiing. So that was sick to watch that as well. And from there on, oh, also Rocket Power. That was another one. Do I own it? Do I do it? Okay, I tapped it, sorry.
Okay, have you, do you hang out with Ingrid, do you guys do the push-up game? If you unnecessarily say you're sorry, you're supposed to do 10 push-ups.
Oh, is that what it is? I haven't done that yet.
Yes.
With Ingrid.
Yeah, we do that in, we do these avalanche clinics. Safe S clinics, and that's one of our rules.
Should I do 10 push-ups?
You don't have to do push-ups. We're going to do, but I just love it. He's racking up all kinds of points over here.
I love this.
I'm going to be my favorite partner tonight.
He's going to, like, troll me over here.
Totally.
Love it.
Totally.
So I started through all of that stuff. Rocket Power was a sweet show, too, to watch. All those extreme sports, definitely through skateboarding and through the X Games. And then I started going through with my older brother in a small town in Connecticut, or a small ski hill in Connecticut called Ski Sundown. I started skiing on the east and then moved out west to the bigger mountains.
Introduction of me, I'm Mallory Duncan. Probably most people don't know me here, but I'm a wearer of many hats. So I grew up in the East Bay Area. And I've been a lifelong skier. My dad was actually the person who introduced me to skiing back when I was like 18 months old. And he learned to ski when he was like 28, lived in Sacramento, used to go up to Tahoe all the time. And so he just was like a passionate skier, the type of dude who wanted to go up every weekend. And fortunately, he had two kids that he had to drag along with him. So me and my sister started at a pretty young age. And yeah, I moved up to Tahoe when I was like 14 years old. And fell in love with the sport, had an evolving relationship with it my entire life. And where I've landed with it is I'm a sponsored skier, and I also am a sales rep. So I work for a number of brands in the outdoor industry, mostly ski and snowboard side of things. And yeah, just like try and put it all together, being an athlete, being part of the industry as a salesperson, you know, and bug all of the brands that I work with to support my projects, but also to, you know, improve and continue to grow in their own ways. So that's the background on me.
Well, and if I may, where Mallory and I first got introduced, Sam Kimmerly with Forefront was like, hey, have you seen this film, The Black Country Journal? And I had not. And then I saw it. And then I was like, I need to meet this guy. And so I don't know if some of you may have heard the Blister Cinematic conversation that I did with Mallory about the Black Country Journal, but that's where I first got introduced to Mallory, and it's really cool to have you here in CB. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Filmmaker as well. Throwing that out.
Yeah.
My name is Angel Collinson. And I also was in the backpack that I'm so bummed is illegal now, because that was the tits.
The tits.
I remember my earliest memories are from the backpack, actually. I remember specific scenes. I loved that thing. And my dad was a ski patroller, snow safety director up at Snowbird. And I grew up in the employee housing up there. So I skied my whole life, got into racing. Worked really hard at racing, missed the U.S. ski team when I was 19, decided to go to college. My brother Johnny Collinson, who's also a pro skier, at the time was like, yo, you should try some of these big mountain comps. And I was like, cool, sounds great. Like, it'd be a good way to get me out of the library. And then fell into a career. And that lasted longer than I was planning, like, I don't know, 10 years. And then 3 years ago, I hung them up and totally walked away from the sport and learned how to bought a sailboat before I knew how to sail. Then I learned how to sail with my partner, Pete, and I've been spending the past couple years sailing around the world. And this is my first winter back after taking a few years off. I think this is day 7, so it's been really fun to shred with people and just like, you know, I think being in the industry, we all have our gripes, and it was really cool to just be able to like walk away from it and come back and do it just for me. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well done, all. Let's start the story time. If I ask you about a favorite day in the mountains or a favorite ski trip, Elise, what comes to mind?
So last year, I filmed for a movie that I produced alongside Jackie Peso called Here, Hold My Kid. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. Yeah. Nice little soundbite for that. This is funny because this is different than the story I was telling Angel earlier when we were catching up. But I think the trip when we went to Andermatt, there's a lot of stuff that went incredibly sideways. I mean, when you're trying to travel with a one-year-old to Europe and sharing space with another couple with a one-year-old and the sicknesses that happen, et cetera. But I guess maybe because to me, the Alps and going there, I just have such a romantic idea of it. I've been able to do it, luckily, enough in my career that you would think I would lose that, I don't know, that magical thought of what it is to go there, but it was so great to spend it with another family. I think I've always had this idea that doing a family ski trip somewhere, you know, I guess when you've been a professional skier long enough, all the ski trips you take are all for work. And as exciting as that is, there's this other side of it where there's a lot of pressure to perform. There's a lot of things that you have to do to make, to film and get a segment. And even though there was a lot of pressure for this movie, it was a family trip. And it was the first family trip with our son. And it was really exciting. It was really neat. So I look forward to continuing this journey of doing ski trips with my child.
I think one of my most favorite moments that kind of pushed me into the ski space more, because so a little background of me is that I lost my leg from a blood infection when I was about 9 months old, and got into skiing all on my own pretty much with my older brother helping me and more so like this tough love, like, get up. I know you can do it on your own, but if you really need my help, I'll be there for you if you need it. So that was nice to have that support system. But when I started skiing, I moved up to Vermont to go skiing a bunch. And then I became an intern at Vermont Adaptive at Sugarbush. And I was on a lesson, and this kid was on tethers. I believe he had Down syndrome as well. So he was a little stubborn sometimes, which was chill. I've worked with a lot of kids with Down syndrome. And he was having the time of his life, being on tethers on this green circle. Most of us will think it's like a ski run that just takes us back to the lodge kind of thing. And he was just like hooting and hollering. And I was like, okay, this is fucking sick. Like, hell yeah. Like, this is what skiing's about. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter how big the mountain is or how like epic the ski line is. Now, like, as I progress and more into the pro skier space, like, yeah, like, all these epic trips and things that we go on are really cool. It's just another way of playing in the snow. But this kid was having the time of his life, and I was like, okay, I think I need to stick to the adaptive skiing thing a little bit more. And that pushed me into becoming a director at an adaptive program, and I started seeing more and more of, like, how impactful skiing was for a lot of folks with disabilities, and just like getting them into their body a little bit more through movement and through that ability, which was like mind blowing to me. And I think those moments were the ones that like stuck me into the ski space and have stuck around forever.
By the way, one of the things I learned about Vasu yesterday as well, very pro amputation. So like
that's true. Yes.
I was like, dude, I'm so happy. Like I've had this fractured arm, and so I was like, dude, I haven't skied in like 5 or 6 weeks. Yesterday was my first day back on snow. And he's like, why didn't you just amputate your arm?
It's always the number one answer. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I totally could have been skiing like 5 weeks ago, and I was So anyway, good thing to know about you. Pro amputation.
I don't know. Disabled isn't a bad word. You know, it's like we make tools to make our lives much easier. So.
But I actually did really think about like I could have been skiing for like the last 5 weeks.
Yeah, if you chop your arm off, totally.
So he's giving me a lot to think about. Mallory.
Yeah, we can still chop that off, you know. Yeah. Like, then you don't have to deal with
it's
it.
It's healed.
Anymore.
I'm like, everybody, okay, it's healed. Right, don't chop my arm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have like kind of a funny story, I guess, from one of my early days skiing in the backcountry. So I live in Bend, Oregon now. Been there for the last 8 years. Shout out Bend. But yeah, early on, like I think it was like 2018, like one of the things that's been really challenging and for everyone, I think, who does backcountry skiing is like finding that partner who aligns with them and, you know, has similar objectives. And somebody who was that person for me was a fellow by the name of Colin Landeck. And he was a climber, mostly a mountaineer. I came from like a ski racing background, very like downhill oriented. And so we're just like opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, he wanted to climb some like crazy thing. I wanted to ski something that's kind of considered crazy, you know. And so it was great because we both pushed each other in these weird directions. But we went on this trip out in Broken Top, out in, you know, outside of Bend, if y'all have ever been there. And, you know, Colin, terrible skier, great dude, one of my best partners to this day, still talk to him all the time. And, yeah, we decided that we're just like, yo, we're going to camp out in the wood, like in the woods. And like, it was cold March. And Colin wanted to, you know, climb this line that was on the north side of Broken Top. And I had never really used an ice axe at this point in my life, right? So I was like, yeah, sure, man. Like, I trust you, you know. We brought some ropes, you know. We got a harness. We had our pyramid tent. We were all camped out. And we go to the north side super early, wake up in the morning, and go climb this this thing. And we roped up immediately. It was like 1,000 feet of climbing. Anyways, we'll fast forward through it. Essentially, it took us about 12 hours to climb this route. I thought it was going to be a chill. I thought we were just going to ski some powder. I really did. Colin had some different things in mind. So I placed an ice screw for the first time and only time in my life. That was pretty cool. And so anyways, 12 hours later, we get to the top of our line and beautiful west-facing slope. It's the afternoon, you know, and our plan was to ski out that evening. And clicked into my bindings. Didn't click in quite right. Took one turn, ski popped off. Went all the way to the bottom of the run, 3,000 feet down. Our camp was like over there. And so, you know, sun setting. I remember I had one of those in reaches, but you only have presets. And so my preset for like we're good was just completely over the top. It was something like, yo, mom, like I'm living the dream. I love you. And so I pressed the preset. There was a middle one too that was like, hey, something went wrong, like, but we're good. Like maybe it said that. I wasn't sure at the time. And I was like, I don't want my mom to be worried, so I'm just gonna hit the good one. Didn't work. My mom received it, and I was supposed to be home at that point, and she saw it. She's like, this can't be right. He must have gotten buried in an avalanche and the snow pressed his button for him. And so my roommate, my girlfriend at the time, like all my homies are just out searching for us. And meanwhile, I'm like, you know, skidding around Broken Top. And I'll end it on this little note here because it's just kind of funny. But so me and Colin get back to the tent. And fortunately, we brought an extra meal, you know. So we're like, all right, cool. We got another nice night in the backcountry. Like, it's going to be totally fine. Like, we got this food. And so we're boiling water and we're cooking up the last of our food. And water boils. Colin looks over at me and he's like, yo, thank God this water just boiled because we just ran out of propane.
Oh my God.
And in that moment, he knocks over the pot and it just falls into the snow and all of our water's gone. So that was, yeah, that was a funny story from the backcountry one of those days.
Man, we said favorite day.
That was one of my favorite days, honestly. It was beautiful sunset.
Oh my God.
It was a good time. It was.
Wait, did you ski down with one ski?
I did.
How's that?
Oh yeah. All those ski drills when I was a kid worked out. So. Yeah.
There's a lot of them with ski racing.
Wait, you skied down 3,000 feet on one ski?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, he didn't have to ski down because he fell all the way down. Yeah. So he was already at the bottom.
I was like, holy shit.
Wow. Did you ever get your ski back?
I did, yeah. I got it back and we skinned out the next morning.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And then I had to answer my parents and, you know, that's the less fun part of the story.
Yeah.
But I was all good, so that was really mattered.
That was a good story. You're a good storyteller. My favorite day in the mountains. I feel like that's a huge question because, okay, there's one day that sticks out. And I feel like, so I filmed with TGR, Teton Gravity Research, for many years and had a few trips with Elise as well. And, you know, what makes the cut, what makes the movies is like the best of the best. It's like 1% of your days out there. And also what you don't realize is that most of the time the conditions like are way shittier than they look. They look better. That like the days where maybe it's like you've got 6 inches on ice, like, and it's sloughing like crazy and it looks awesome, but it is terrifying as an athlete. That's like a lot of the days out there. Subpar conditions, it's really stressful. And the days where you think what it looks like in the ski movies where it's like bottomless pow in AK with your friends, sunny, good stability. Like there's such a small time of like our job and of our time out there. And it's kind of infuriating because people are like, oh yeah, cool. You just fly around in helicopters and like shred sick pow. And you're like, there's way, way more work and scratching and like scary situations in there than you think. Anyways, my favorite day was when it was actually one of those days. It was like, we were up in Alaska. There was, well, we were in a zone that we called NHL because the first time we flew there, it was just blue ice, like the whole way under 5 inches of pow. So it looked so good, but it was like not skiable because it was blue ice from a rain event in January. We were there the next year and it was game on. And so it's like perfect spines, good outruns. There's kind of a gnarly, we call it a bergschrund, like where the glacier separates from like the base of the mountain. So you have to like do a little air. You've probably seen it in ski movies. Everything is pretty ideal. This never happens. Like good stability, sunny weather. We're there in plenty of time. And it was one of those moments where you're like, wow, I've dreamed about this my whole life. We all think that this is how it is. But it's not, but we're doing it right now. And I remember I try not to ski with music when I'm filming so that I'm more situationally aware. And I was like, oh no, we're putting on Rage Against the Machines. So I like, you know, fumbled my ear, like little, I didn't even have Bluetooth or whatever, like got him in there. And yeah, we just had like the most epic, I think we each got 5 lines that day, which is a lot. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, that's the only day like that that I have had in my entire year of, I think I filmed with TGR 8 years, and I only had one day where it was like good stability, no stress, and we were all just, you're just like bottomless, like you're skiing spines, and you're getting in the white room, and you're not worried, and like everyone was just feeling it, and it was like so good, and it's hard to describe how rare that was. Especially with like climate change and snow conditions really being increasingly variable. So that was like the best one up there. But I would have to say like so many of my favorite days don't have that like memorable day moment because they're at the ski resort. So many of my favorite days are at the ski resort and you're like either solo or you're with a couple close friends and maybe it's like storming and it's free refills and like everyone's kind of out, it's 3:30 and you're just like in the zone, and those days are my most favorite, and there's like, you know, more of them and they're my absolute fave. So that's what I got.
It's funny hearing you say that. I'm so thrilled to be back on snow even after a short, you know, break. But with what you just said, Angel, it almost, for me, it's like if I had said, what was your favorite therapy session of all time? And it's like, I don't know, like there, you know, like that's literally what it's kind of felt like for me to be back and getting to get out with friends and people. And it's so good, like all the time, kind of. So anyway, maybe that's why it can be tricky to like to identify the single best day out. It's like, I don't know that that's really maybe the typical experience. It's like, we go because we like it and we get a lot out of it often.
Often, yeah.
Switching gears, and we're going to start with Mallory because given what he just said, I have no idea what he's going to say for this one. But I was curious to ask, like, a scariest moment in the mountains. And I'm like, I think he thought that's what I asked him the first time. But if that's not his answer, I'm not sure what he come up with. Scariest moment in the mountains or standing at the top of a line?
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, I feel like that fear oftentimes, it comes from a lot of different things. It's not always because of the line that you're looking at. Sometimes it's the people that you're with or the environment and, you know, in which you found yourself in that place. You know, you could be at the top of a, you know, a relatively mellow line and it's just sheet ice, and that might be like really, really scary. So yeah, I mean, I get scared frequently. But I think like maybe to kind of like combine your question from before and also one of those moments that was scary for me. So like one of my best, but also really scary days was, a day that we had out in Alaska. We were camped on the glacier for 12 days. And, I haven't done a lot of like spine skiing. So this is like a whole new thing for me. And, I was coming off of an injury. So I had torn three of the ligaments in my left knee. And
chop it off.
I had been chopped. I should have just chopped it.
I told you.
Should have chopped it. Hashtag chop it off.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So I was up there, leg, I didn't chop it off, but we were up there and I hadn't really skied. I'd been building up to like kind of stepping out of my comfort zone a little bit throughout. And, you know, you throw on top of that the fact that you're camped out on a glacier. And, you know, if you do injure yourself, you don't ruin it just for yourself, but you ruin it for everyone else on the trip, too. So I got up there and there was something that I really, really wanted to ski. It was this spine line. And I wasn't 100% confident that I could do it, like leading throughout the trip, like first day of the trip. And I started to kind of develop that confidence and that reassurance in my knee and that ability to kind of step out a little bit and push it to the extent that felt appropriate. But I remember standing up on top of that line and, you know, with filming and whatnot, oftentimes you end up sitting up there for far too long, just contemplating all the things that could go wrong or right or whatever. And yeah, that was probably, I think, to this day, the scariest I've ever been. And yeah, outside of Anchorage, about 80 miles or so. Really, really, you know, ended up going well, by the way.
Didn't chop it off.
Didn't have to chop off the leg. Didn't re-injure myself. And I actually like kind of took it slow. You know, I stopped in one part of that line because I was just like, this is like how I'm going to grow in this particular environment. And I think ultimately it was the right thing to do, because if I tried to send it off the thing I was going to, I might have injured myself. Like, who knows? So, but I was up there for like 30 minutes, just in my own head, like, oh God, don't blow this for everybody. So that'd be my scariest moment.
Okay. I mean, I was a part of the Stevens Pass avalanche that I was caught in. That was by far the scariest moment, because I literally had the thoughts that I was going to die. But I'm not going to go down that road, because that's a bit more intense.
But that's your actual answer. I mean, but just...
No, but that, I don't want that to be my actual answer. I'm just saying that's the obvious answer, because... But that wasn't on top of line, whatever. So we deal with a lot of scaring ourselves on top of lines. Like, I mean, there's the saying, if you're not scared, it's not going to make the movie. You know, like, it's got to be. But because of that, so you know whatever you're skiing, you've really got to pump yourself up for. And so a lot of times when you're standing alone up top waiting to drop in, you do whatever you can to pump yourself up to be excited about your line. And a lot of times I become a little cheerleader and I'm just like, go, Elise, go, go, Elise, you've got, and I'm like, it's like literally if you
can confirm
she really does. or I have a few other techniques, but so I'm standing on top of this one that pops out is I'm in Bella Coola and I'm standing on top of Morrison Hotel, named after Seth Morrison. There's some infamous lines that have gone down, and including Hugo Harrison, who also, gosh, we're going back, and we're going to some legend skiers. Hugo never, ever, ever crashed, and on this face, he actually crashed. Anyway, so I'm pumping myself up top. Also, Ingrid Backstrom, she had one of her breakout segment has a line from this zone, and you know, yeah, it's a big deal. So it made quite an impression on people like Angel and myself. I'm standing up there and I'm being the cheerleader, pumping myself up. Well, the thing is, when you're skiing sometimes really, really steep faces, you don't want to charge out of the gates like you are racing a downhill. And I did. And after like the first second or so turn, I go over an air, caught too much air, should have been going slower. Next turn, I'm now going Makalooney, and I hit a spine and high side, and I proceed to tomahawk a good 20 plus times. You know, the goggles pop out, the airbag goes off. It looks like in the video I'm actually growing.
Oh my God.
It's pretty violent. It was a very violent crash. My husband was sitting at the bottom just, and that's the footage because from him, the filmer up top, I went out a screen as I started to tomahawk, and Cody on his little camera, and he kept it going, watching me just like, oh my God. So it's funny how I remember being really scared up top, but then also like, oh, I'm overcoming this, and then getting totally beat down. So yeah, we all go through some scary moments. Sometimes it goes well, sometimes not so much, but that's what it takes to make the movie.
Let's see. So a few years ago, myself and another individual friend of mine, Pete McAfee, who also has one leg, were attempting to ski off of Denali. And we were successful, and we became the first disabled people to do so. And that was like a really cool claim to fame for that one. But coming down, we did a test run up the West Buttress. Actually, coming down the West Buttress, the last go around from 17 camp, from the summit, all in one push. We had to rope up, and I was like, okay, this is, there's 3 inches of bulletproof ice, blue ice, on top of this like styrofoam kind of snow, like an inch of it that was just sloughing off. And I was like, okay, do I walk down this on my outriggers? Or do I ski down this? And many of us maybe in the audience think we can, you know, I personally think I ski better than I can walk most days. And I decided to ski down it. And our team was like, all right, cool. We're going to ski belay you down this. And I was just like, okay, this is going to be terrifying. It was a 45 degree pitch and sheer ice. And I had a GoPro. We have GoPro footage of this. And I was like, oh my God, do I jump turn this? Do I just side slip the whole thing? Like, this is so terrifying. I made it down in one piece, but I think I almost shit myself and peed myself. Everything in between happened. And I was like, oh my God, I think I made it. All right, I'm gonna sit here for about 30 minutes just to make sure I process what just happened. So that was quite the debacle that we got ourselves into.
I've kind of been rifling through. Also kind of hard to pick just one. I've had two. I don't fall very often either, like very rare. But it turns out when I do, I like to take about 1,000-foot tomahawk, which is inconvenient. the same year that I won Line of the Year, Good Morning America asked me if I wanted to be on the show, not because of winning Line of the Year, but because I took 1,000-foot tomahawk that went viral. And I was like, you fucking kidding me? So it's obviously like pretty scary when you start tomahawking up in Alaska and it's really steep. And all of a sudden, like the second tomahawk that I had, the first one I was totally fine. I jammed my middle two knuckles and that was it. And then the second one, I blew my knee. Elise was there for that one. But it's like, it's interesting when you're falling because things go in slow motion and you get, you know, you kind of get a chance to review and be like, this actually could be it for me. How do I feel about my life thus far? I better make peace with it right now. And so it's like a really interesting liminal space, but like, I'm less scared. As I've been reflecting, I've been less scared in those tomahawks because there's something that happens when you're immediately confronted with the reality of a situation and you know that you have no choice other than to accept it. And I think there's like a really cool, magical moment that happens when you're forced to accept whatever situation you're in and that you don't have control over it. And so in those tomahawk moments, even though they're really scary, I wouldn't say they're the scariest moments because I was just forced to be okay with them. But I think it's actually scarier when you're standing on top of something and you have a choice and you're like, how do I work with this risk? How do I know that I'm gonna be confident and ski as well as I can in order to nail this? Those moments are scary when you have more control and you have to do a really good job. And there was a few years ago, actually one of my breakout segments, I was up in Juneau and they'd had a rain event, Juneau, Alaska, they'd had a rain event earlier in the year and it hadn't really healed. And so everything looked dope. It was like 6 inches to 8 inches of pow on top of often sheer ice. But you couldn't tell, some of it was kind of grippy and others was blue ice. And you know, it's like, we have to make a segment, we gotta make something work. And so you didn't really know when you dropped into something you had to plan for, this could be total sheer ice. If it is, can I manage it? Where's my outrun? All of that stuff. And like doing that again and again and again on top of every run, being like, okay, can I point it all the way to the bottom if this is blue ice and I have no grip, was absolutely terrifying. And like being with all of those guys, like we are all gripped. Like Sage would get to the bottom of something and be like, yeah, it's blue ice. I'd be fucking gripped if I were you guys. And you're looking at your line and you're like, ooh, I don't know. And there was, you know, there's times when we were like, something was too gnarly. It ended up being blue ice and we had to pull off. And so it's also always the lesson in being like, walking away at the end of the day is always the goal. And figuring out as professionals, like where that line is and how to push it is tough. And it's really scary. So yeah, I think that line where we're constantly dealing with ice under the fresh snow was probably the worst.
Here's my last question for the moment. Most starstruck moment. Elise.
This is like a starstruck / embarrassing moment. Okay, so as I had mentioned earlier, I grew up ski racing intensely. God, I was so passionate about it. I loved it so much. When I was, you know, like 14, 15 years old, Tommy Moe came home with the gold and silver medals. So anyways, I happened to be in Colorado for Junior Olympics, and I'm 16 years old. And at the end of it, we had an extra day, and the World Cup Finals just happened to be taking place in Vail. So we got to go, and I was so excited to go see my heroes. And we're in the corral at the bottom, and Mark Girardelli is there. And Mark Girardelli, he's 5-time overall World Cup champion. Amazing GS skier, beautiful skier. I just thought he was the world. Well, I just so happen to have a pin. I'm like, hey, great. Will you sign my jacket? And he's like, yeah. And he came up to sign it. And he goes, but you have nothing there to sign. Because I had no boobs. And I'm like, and he says this in front of like a couple of literally the most like my frenemy guys on the ski team. And there's like, no way. And I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? My hero just called me out for having no boobs to a 16-year-old. And I don't know what he was thinking. I still had him sign my jacket. I was like, whatever, sign. Not my favorite skier maybe anymore.
Wow.
But I was so starstruck for a moment. And yeah, so that's how that went.
Wow. But okay.
That's okay. Yeah, that's okay.
Basu, top that.
All right. All right. So when I was about 21, one of my films got into Banff Mountain Film Festival, and it toured around the world a little bit. And we got invited to go to Banff, and I was in Montana at the time. And there was, a Nat Geo party or something that happened. And somehow, miraculously, I ended up next to a sweaty Jimmy Chin. And I handed him my crutches, and we started dancing together. like bouncing around. It was like a rave or something. I don't remember what it was. And I was like, okay, this is pretty sick. I don't know if it was a starstruck moment. I just started just dancing with him. that was like my first impulse decision that I made.
I was going to ask why it was a sweaty Jimmy Chin, but rave.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I like that.
And now I like call him for advice on films and shit. So it's like, okay, wow, this is a full circle.
So that was a good dance.
Yeah,
the dance went well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then I asked him for his number. Yeah.
Wow. Do we have footage of the dancing?
Mm-mm.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a
this is almost pre-Instagram and Facebook.
Okay.
It's like right at that cusp.
That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Dancing with sweaty Jimmy Chin and then getting his number.
Oh, years after, though.
Oh, okay.
After I signed with North Face. Yes, yes, yes.
He wasn't like, you are such a good dancer.
No, okay. No, no.
Okay. Mallory.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, even right now, I mean, just being here as part of this panel, it feels, like, really, really special for me to be surrounded by these inspiring, incredible athletes. You know, I feel, it feels wild to be up here, so... I mean, I feel like I'm continuously having these moments of just being surrounded by people who I've like, you know, watched and looked up to on Instagram for ski movies for years and years. So it's a continuing and evolving, you know, thing all the time. And I guess I would say that I feel this is like totally not gonna answer your question, but I just wanna say that continued that continued momentum in one direction of what we do, which is ski, because we love to ski or snowboard or slide or however you do it. You know, it's an incredible thing. And I think if you do it for long enough, you really do get to meet some folks who will change your life. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, outside of just like, you know, on a, what seems like, at least as of recently, meeting folks on a monthly basis who I never thought I would be able to interact with. Outside of that, like, one experience that comes to mind just right out the gate, and this isn't necessarily in the snow sports realm, but I was in Fort Worth, Texas this September, and I was screening the Black Country Journal, and there was this cat who was there, who's a skateboarder. I didn't really know who he was. I vaguely recognized him, but didn't know really who it was. And turns out, we show the Backcountry Journal, and this dude walks up to me, and we kind of start talking. And I realized pretty quickly that it's Kareem Campbell.
Holy shit.
Which I used to play him like on Tony Hawk, like straight up. And like, I was like, he's the one black dude in Tony Hawk, right? And I remember just like putting that together and just being like, oh my God, like this dude, and trying to hold it together as I'm realizing in the moment and just be like, yeah, it's cool, man. Like this is fine. And and he was hyped too. He was really hyped on it. And we like ended up taking a photo together, and I was just like, damn, this is crazy. So that was a moment that definitely sticks out in my head.
So I went to a one room homeschool that my mom taught up at Alta. There were 7 kids, and it was in a community center. It was a church. It also was like, it was called Our Lady of the Snows, but it also was like a community event center. And every year the TGR movie would premiere there, which was really cool because all the locals from Alton Snowbrook would come up and we'd all see, and sometimes the TGR athletes would be there. And yeah, I think when I was like 14, it was kind of the first, I want to say it was like either the first or second TGR movie that I saw, or like big, like a ski movie. And Sage was there, Sage Catavrigalosa. And I've had this feeling experience 3 times in my life. And the first time was watching Sage ski during this movie. It was Tangerine Dream. So they're ripping around in the like shitty old orange pickup and picking people up. It is this, you know, so Sage was there and he'd introduced the movie. And when his name popped up on screen and I was watching him ski, even though like I never really wanted to get into big mountain skiing and I was racing and stuff, I was overcome by this feeling I can't describe that was, I want to do that one day, or I'm going to do that one day. And I went up to him after the movie and like, you know, I'm a 14-year-old girl. I'm crushing. You know, he's sort of like weird, awkward, wizard, mysterious guy. I don't know what his vibe is, but I like it. But
like
I think
Jesus, right?
Yes, like, yeah, like, yeah, full like prophet stoner, somehow.
Stoner Jesus,
prophet Jesus, absolutely. And so as a 14-year-old girl, like, you know, he's signing posters on the grand piano that we also would, you know, use in school. So I go up to him. And I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm like rehearsing a million different things. And I get up to him and the like it just pops out of my mouth. And I was like, one day I'm going to do what you do. And I was just like, oh my God, like that is so dorky. Like how many times is that? Like, why would I have said that? And but he just looks down at me, and I was so embarrassed, beet red. And he just looks over at me and he's like, one day you will then. And 10 years later, maybe 12, I am up in Alaska on my first trip ever with TGR, with rooming with Sage, on a trip with him and Dana and Seth Morrison. And I was just like, what the fuck? So cool. Luckily, Sage did not remember that story because I'd been embarrassed about it my entire life. I brought it up to him later and he was like, oh, yeah, I don't remember. And I'm like, oh, yeah, just because you do this all the time. So
you should have been like, see, I told you.
Yeah. Yeah. Bitch, I told you. But he did. He shared many hacks with me. One was if you really love pro skiing, do not, or if you really love skiing, do not become a pro skier. As I was up in Alaska with him. Now I understand what he meant. And the other was his favorite snack, which is also now one of my favorite snacks. Sounds super weird. Is an avocado where you pour goldfish in the middle of the little hole. And I don't know why it's so good. Probably because Sage taught it to me. But yeah, that's where I'm going to wrap it up.
Can I have a question? This is a personal question. So one thing about Angel is... it's been a few years since I've actually got to put my arms around her and give her a big hug, which is awesome. I really miss working with this girl, but she's notorious for always having candy on her. She has all her pockets have like different stashes of kinds of candy. Are you still on the candy kick on the boat? Can you be?
I'm kind of in and out of recovery.
And that's how it was when we were skiing too. Sometimes she'd be like, nope, I'm off, I'm done. And then the next trip would be like, back on.
I actually just had to get a crown replaced because it got ripped out with Chewy Spree's.
Let's turn it over to audience questions.
I'm loving this. Shout out to Rocket Power. Yeah, you know what's up. So Jeremy Jones gave a talk one time and he referred back to his competitive career and he said that the most valuable thing he got from that was the friendships that he gathered from that. For all of you in your careers, looking back, what is something that you wish you valued more or appreciated more that you maybe overlooked at the time? And maybe if you could go back to like a 10-year-old version of yourself and give them advice and be like, you should appreciate this more. I am one day I hope to be a pro skier and kind of going through the motions there and loving all of that and the grind to hopefully achieve that one day. And looking back with all of you guys pretty established now, what is something that you wish you appreciated more at that time?
Okay, I'm going to kind of actually take this and flip it a little bit. So the ski season's really short, and especially when I was younger, it seemed like... if anything pulled you from skiing, no way, absolutely not. And the one thing that I feel very strongly about as I've gone on in life is that, like, weddings, memorials, things of that nature are so incredibly important. And when I was, I literally was singing this earlier today, how one of my best girlfriends decided to get married in Costa Rica in January. And this was just a couple years into being a pro skier, and I was doing everything I could to try and make it. And I didn't go. And I'm like, I can't believe, you know, and she loves skiing too. I'm like, why would they do a wedding in Costa Rica in January? That's crazy. I still regret to this day not going. So as much as we love skiing, it's going back to the friendships and those important moments that are the most important thing that like skiing actually can get in the way of too. We can be so obsessed with something that actually those things in life, the family and friends, are really important. And one other small thing, that whole saying, no friends on a powder day, is the dumbest saying in the world. Who are you going to high five at the bottom of your run? Right? So,
that's the dumbest thing.
Yeah, friends on a powder day.
I think the biggest for me is when I was a young kid with a disability, I was comparing myself to a lot of people very, very often. And I just saw this recently where it says comparison is the destruction of joy.
Yes.
And that's what I would really tell my 10-year-old self is like, stop trying to compare yourself to other people because my ability is my ability. And I can, you know, I thoroughly enjoy rooting other people on. And when I see them do something really cool, I'm like, all right, cool, I'll give it a try. And if I can't, like, it's not a big deal. You know, it's like, I'll just try something different. We're all very, very unique people, body and mind. And I think telling my younger self that a little bit more so would have helped alleviate some of the anxiety and stress that came with the disability.
Let's go. All right. Kristen Sinnott, our Blister Summit director. I'm already her least favorite person. We're going to go to 7:45 hard stop, but that is our actual hard stop. So two more questions, and we got about 5 minutes to do it.
I'll try and make this quick. This is a Vasu-specific question. I don't know if you remember this, but it meant a lot to us. Me and my buddies were going up Mount Rainier a few years back, and we're like, oh, dude, shoot. There's some people, like, up ahead of us. We're going to try and catch them. We're like, oh, we're catching them, like, slowly catching them. And as we're getting close, like, shoot. We're slowly catching a dude with one leg, you know, like, ah, oh, man, that's pretty embarrassing. And then we watch you just shoot up your finger, like, oh, man, that using the pure might of your triceps. And unfortunately, like, the peak just didn't really go that day. So we, like, ended up being with you. We turned around to watch you go rip down the fear finger and shredded it. It was awesome. But my question for you is, where do you think that you inspire both paraplegic disability athletes and fully limbed athletes more in your uphill or your downhill abilities or all the above?
That's a great question. I feel like that's like for many athletes actually. I don't know. I'm trying to shift my motivation and inspiring by using my mouth a little bit more and just like talking about a lot of these issues. I've already had a big platform made and that was through my ability, and now that I have a foot in the door in the industry, I'm going to pry it open to make sure other people that look like me or have disabilities are in rooms like this. So that's my biggest thing right now. And I think unique people like the folks on this panel right now are the ones that are really changing up the ski space for better, making it more inclusive and creating really cool designs that can help, you know, alleviate any kind of stress on our bodies or whatever it may be. So once we start incorporating different ideas and mindsets from different communities, I think this space is going to become more and more, it's going to flourish and be more abundant, let's just say.
And be far more interesting.
I know, dude, watching Vasu shred the moguls today, I was floored.
If you leave the summit without getting some ski time with Vasu, which you're welcome, I just got like hundreds of people on you. It's just fun. It's just really fun. And I highly recommend. Last question.
Okay, this question, I hope it's not silly and it may have obvious answers, but for me it's not silly. So I really want to solicit personal responses to this question. Why are you doing what you're doing? And maybe that's like, why are you filming? But like, yeah, like, I know it's broad and we don't have any more time, but to me that's a meaningful question.
I'll go first. I quit pro skiing because I got burnt out and I really love skiing so much. I was really sad to like lose that and miss that. So I quit because I was like, oh, there's so much more to life that I'm really hungry for. And skiing fulfilled some of that, but I wanted more. And so like in this moment, my life is very full. Skiing is one part and there's many other things because I think there's so much to life. And I spent a lot of my ski career trying to be my best and I did a really good job. And that's a really fulfilling journey for me. And I was always hungry for more. And so it feels really cool in this moment to be doing skiing just because I love it. I don't have SmartWheel's a sponsor. They've been with it. They've been with me through the like all of the ups and downs, which is cool. But it's really cool to be back to doing the sport just for me, just because I love it, and be including these other parts of what it is to be human as well. And that's like for me where I've found, yeah, just like the fulfillment that I've always craved.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm glad you asked it, because I feel like it's not as obvious necessarily as like I love skiing. You know, I think it is more complex than that when you really dig into it, especially when you're making a career out of it. So that said, a huge part of why I do what I do does come down to my like love for the sport. Like, it really does. And I've tried other sports. Like, I actually quit skiing after high school to pursue a completely different sport. I did track for 4 years. And for me, that was like something that spoke more to my roots as a Black person. You know, I see other Black folks who are doing that. And that was like, okay, cool. Like, let me tap into this scene and see what this is about, because maybe this is like a more of like a, in some ways, standard space for me. But man, I mean, like at the end of the day, like what brought me back to it was after I got done with track, I didn't want to continue to do that. And I loved it so much, I enjoyed it, I guess. And it was something that I was good at, actually. Like, I was better at track than I was at ski racing, you know, which is wild, because I dedicated my life to ski racing and then like just didn't make it happen. But so I was really good at that. But at the end of the day, it was like when I got on snow, and especially when I got away from the competition side of things, like I fell in love again with that sport. And yeah, I've always just wanted that to be part of my life. I've always wanted it to be, whether it's just as an athlete or as someone who's involved on the like business side of things. It's just something I care so much about. And like even today, sitting on the chairlift, I find myself sometimes like sitting there like just so excited to like get off the chair and make some turns. Like, I don't want to sit on the chair. I want to go ski. So I think it does come down to love. I mean, at the end of the day, there is a big part of it. But also, like, for me, I think it's important to tell that story of like, there isn't just one way to be a skier. There isn't just one experience of what that looks like. And you don't have to ski in a certain type of way. You don't have to have your career exist with the ski industry in a certain type of way. And so I think for me now, it's about kind of finding what is most meaningful to me beyond the skiing, but like more into how I experience the mountains. So, and hopefully sharing that with other people, and they can relate with it too and continue to build on that. So
it's the way I'm wired. Like, when you are putting yourself on the spot and having to perform and step it up, I had the luxury. I was just up at visiting home in Alaska for the holidays and had a chance to go heli skiing for a day in the Todrillos, which, I mean, it was magical. And we were doing such mellow skiing. I would have said no today too. You know, like, it's the way I'm wired, that with filming and doing that type of skiing, it's what gets me going with skiing. And I'm kind of, my body's starting to break down. And I feel like I'm being held together by duct tape sometimes. I'm kind of worried that, like, I don't know what's going to happen, as I really can't continue to ski the way I ski. But that's the way I want to ski, and if I will still take enjoyment out of it. So, just a really raw, honest answer.
In short, it's because of community. I don't know, a few years back, I made some values for myself that I stuck by whenever I signed with sponsors, is community, land, and joy. And those are the things that I really try to focus on when I'm working with a company, or anyone really, whenever I'm going skiing or literally living my life, is just those three values. Is like, I need to make sure it's not just about myself. I do want to focus on the joy that comes from it. And obviously, like, the land is what helps me bring that to a lot of people. So those are kind of the ways that I've built on what I am doing now, is just trying to focus on those values as much as possible. That is that's also been brought up to me as an East Asian or a South Asian person, is like we very heavily focus on community and try to uplift everyone as we climb throughout the entire process. So throughout everything I do, I'm just always trying to make sure other people are coming along with me for the ride as well. And that's the biggest thing I try to focus on.
Well, we said we were gonna share some stories with you, but you've also, I think, received a lot of food for thought. So thank you so much to all of you. It is a pleasure to have you all here. Thank you. See you on the mountain.
Well, that's it for this edition of the Blister Podcast. I want to say thanks to Angel and Mallory and Elise and Vasu for this conversation. And of course, folks, if you come to next year's summit, you'll get to meet and ski with folks like this, which is one of the best things you can do with your winter season. So we'll have more information about that coming your way very soon. And hope to see you at next year's summit. Also, I want to say thank you to Taylor Ahern for producing this episode. Thanks to you for listening. And if you are enjoying these conversations, then we would very much appreciate it if you would take 30 seconds to leave us a rating or a review wherever you get your podcasts. And that will help us keep this whole little enterprise going and growing. All right, everybody. Hope you have a terrific week, and we will talk to you again real soon.